Welcome to the Funny Mummies podcast. I'm your host, Hattie Ashdown, comedian and mum to two very lively boys. Each episode, I chat with amazing women from the world of comedy, bringing you a non-judgy dose of mum and tonic, how to stay afloat, laugh through the chaos, and be bloody great women. Hello, welcome to the Funny Mummies podcast. I'm your host, Hattie Ashdown, and joining me today is a very special guest. She's all the things, a writer, an actor, a singer and comedian. She was a Felt Now New Act of the Year winner. She's currently doing her first solo stand-up show, Free as a Bird, and she's a mum of two. She's originally from Wales, now in Newcastle. Let's meet her. This was a fantastic chat with Kelly Rickard. Hello, Kelly Rickard. Welcome to the Funny Mummies podcast.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
I was trying to think, have we actually met in real life?
Yes.
Was it at the Best in Class?
Yes.
That's what I thought.
Can I just say that you stood out at that meeting in the most lovely way, because when you get a room full of comics together, they might be lovely people, but we're often quite socially awkward, aren't we?
Yeah,
and you just looked at me and we didn't know each other and you just beamed me the most lovely, authentic smile. And I thought, I'm going to find her on Instagram and make her my friend.
Oh, thank you. That's so sweet. For anyone who's thinking, oh, well, you don't remember. It's not that. It was quite a big room, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
And we couldn't.
It was tense.
We were in this tiny little room, all cramped in there. Oh, but I loved it. It was like we were going to start a working class revolution.
Yes. It was really exciting. But I don't know if you ever do this thing where you have your radar on, where I was looking around going, oh, I don't know. Is that person really working class, though? Because where I live in Heaton in Newcastle, there's like a lot of cool doctors and teachers who would call themselves working class.
Ah.
And I'm like, well, it's not enough just to like common people buy pulp. Like, it's...
yeah.
Like, but then having said that, I don't know. I'm self-employed now. And I did go to university, so does that tip me over into not working class anymore? I'm not sure.
I'm the same. I went to university, so I'm like, you know, I was the first, well, I was the only one.
Yes.
Of my siblings. Same. Are you the same?
So me and my sister were the first generation in our family to go. Yeah.
I think that's something you could talk about till the cows come home.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the whole class system probably doesn't exist exactly how it used to. And so, yeah, it's an interesting discussion of what is working class now. I mean, I just like to think it's brilliant people, but I know what you mean. Well, sitting around that table. So for anyone who doesn't know, it's a brilliant organisation called Best in Class, or Best in Class, as I like
yes.
to say. So I'm from Kent originally, and people often introduce me on stage as like, oh, one time I got introduced as that Cockney lass. I'm like, I'm not Cockney, I'm Kent. You know, and sort of feeling like, oh, yeah, really rough compared to a lot of other people. But I loved it in that room because there was such a broad accents.
Yeah, it was gorgeous.
Oh,
yeah.
I loved it. I was like, can't we all just write something together now? Like,
yeah. I bet we would have had some really good stories to tell and not the normal ones that you would hear. I was at a showcase last year for the BBC New Comedy Awards. And, oh, my God, I felt like such a fish out of water because they were very much sort of, they'd all been to private schools. They were lovely. They were so lovely. They were very much a type. And I just felt everything about me felt wrong and too much. I was regretting my bright pink shirt and my mad earrings and my strong accent. I was so aware of myself. And like in that Best in Class room, I didn't feel that. I just, it was nice, wasn't it?
It was nice, and I just loved hearing all the different regional accents and people. And you know, it got a little bit heated at one point.
It did.
When we talked to, I won't go into it, but when we talked to a commissioning editor, commissioner, I should say, on Channel 4. Well, I loved it. I felt like it was like up the workers. And
it was. The socialist revolution was about to happen.
But yeah, so Sian Davies, who runs it, she... Have you been on there?
Yes, the alumni. So I applied last year because it said they were looking for the best new working class comics. And if you got picked, you basically got to go do the fringe Oh my God, it was so amazing because I got to go for a week and they funded the show, they funded the marketing of it. Shan's amazing. She really walks the walk and talks the talk and kind of really cares about helping working class comics. And it was like I got to dip my toe into Edinburgh Fringe without that financial stress of how am I going to do this as a mother of two and what's happening with the children. And it was amazing. I'm so grateful.
But also emotional support because for anybody just doing Edinburgh for the first time, oh my gosh. When I look back, I realised how lucky I was. I did like a shared bill, you know, double bill. Because it's like, it's scary emotionally and stuff. So you had that backing. But yeah, that's Shan's thing, isn't it? To get working class voices, more working class voices in comedy.
Yes.
So anyone listening, they might think, well, what does that really mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how you would explain it, but it's like, it's not something you realise is missing until you watch a certain programme and you go, oh, yeah. And, sorry, I'm going to go off on a rant now. There's a thing in when you're getting something commissioned that a lot of the people that make the TV shows do not come from working class backgrounds.
Yeah.
Because unfortunately, a lot of those jobs, like the runner on a TV show, they're unpaid or they're low paid. So it ends up people that have got like more of a privileged background.
Yeah. And for me, I think like it's sort of a two-pronged thing. It's that thing of you can't necessarily always afford to take the unpaid job or do the internship or take the gap year. But also that thing of like, we don't know the secret way to move through the universe. That private. Yeah. Sometimes when I'm in a green room, I can spot the other working class person because I'm like, oh, you didn't get the etiquette there. That you weren't meant to say that or do that. And I feel it too. I'm like, I shouldn't have said that. And you can just feel that sort of quiet confidence that comes with having been just around people in the arts or around educated people. And when you haven't been, you're like, I'm so aware of myself. It's that thing, isn't it?
Oh, it's so true. I just had a horrible flashback then to being with a TV producer who now is very high up but at the time was just like assistant, and I was just really excited, and I won't say what it was on. I was just really excited to be part of the show, and I just kind of hugged him or something, like, or did something silly, you know, thinking I'm being funny, but he was a bit like, okay, calm down, you know, that kind of, I can't remember what he said, but it honestly, it has stayed with me. It's so silly because you've got to be you. You can't say the wrong thing to the right person, as they say. And
I never heard that before. That's such a good way of looking at it.
I'm remembering that at the moment for my dating exploits, but that's for another podcast.
You can't say the, what is it?
Did I say it wrong? You can't say the wrong thing to the right person.
Oh, I like it. I feel like it works both ways.
My friends, everyone. So, you know, when you're sending a message or whatever and you're worried about how you're going to sound, it's like at the end of the day, if they're the right person or whatever.
Oh, I've got full body goose pimples. I love that.
Oh, my goodness. I've given you goosebumps. Because you are a singer originally.
Yeah.
I mean, you still sing. It doesn't leave you, darling.
No, it doesn't. But it's a little bit, there's a bit of a shelf life with it. I feel like a lot of forums will be like, we're looking for a female singer, 18 to 25. Yeah. And like, the men can be old as shit. The men can be like literally on the stage on a Zimmer frame. And it's like, oh, he's cool because he's really experienced and he's been, but the girls still look very young. I kind of was becoming more and more aware of that. I still love singing. And it's still how I make my money sometimes. I sing at the odd wedding and I do some singing lessons and I still love it. But comedy feels like a different part of me.
I know it's an age-old question, but if you don't mind, how did you get into it? How did it find you?
Oh, okay. So originally I was an actor and a singer. And what I found was whenever I went for parts in musicals or shows, they would be seeing me for the lead girl. I'd go audition and I would get cast as something ridiculous in it. Like once I went for the part of Jill in Jack and Jill, the pantomime, and then they were going to write a part called Daisy the Cow for purely, like for me. And this pattern kept happening where I was like, I was being seen for the serious role, But they, like another time, I went for a Christmas.
Please tell me you played Daisy the Cow.
No, I didn't, because they said my dancing wasn't strong enough.
Oh, that's what they say to all the cows, don't they?
And I went for like another part, which was to play the romantic lead, and it was a Christmas show. And then they cast me as Crappy the Elf. And I just thought, this keeps happening. And one day a lovely director who was really supportive, he just went, Kelly, you are talented, but you need to do comedy. He's like, your timing, your expressiveness, everything. And so that was in my head. Mm. And then I was obsessed with watching stand-up. Just obsessed with it. And like, do I have that in me? Could I do it? Loved making people laugh always. Was always my favourite feeling. And when I did singing gigs, the bit in between the songs...
I was going to ask you that.
Where I would chat to people, I would get such a buzz off it. And I'd be like, is this what stand-up's like? Then I had children. And I've got a theory about why so many mums go into comedy. And that is, I think... childbirth and those early years, you're just flooded with adrenaline. It's so scary. I remember thinking nothing will be as terrifying as having these two little people walking around out there in the world. I might as well give that stand-up thing a go, because it's not going to be as scary as motherhood is. Yeah. And I stand by that. I think in that way, motherhood makes you quite brave, because you go, nothing's going to be as scary as this feeling.
After you've given birth, like, well, for me, the first time, you're on stage, you get a heckler, you just think, not bothered about you, I've just pushed a £7 baby out, £8 baby out.
Yeah, it gives you a sort of confidence in yourself, I think, and a sort of, like you say, an attitude of, you don't scare me, because you don't know what's just come out of my foof. Then in lockdown, I was ill, as we all were. I got COVID and I was lying in bed, and I just remember thinking, if this thing lifts and we're ever allowed out of the house, I'm just going to go and give this stand-up thing a go and get it out of my system and say that I tried it. And that's not what happened. I didn't get it out of my system.
It's still in there, poisoning you.
It embedded itself firmly under my skin, and it's just...
No, but you're brilliant. I mean, I haven't seen you in person, but your clips, I can tell you got it. So you're doing your new show, Free as a Bird. Is that a plan to sort of take that?
I would love to take that to Edinburgh. I would love to. I have taken it to smaller festivals. I've done it at Newcastle Fringe and Durham Fringe and a festival in Manchester. And I've loved doing it. And the Edinburgh thing feels massive. Financially and also that, who's having the children, how are we working that one out? But yes, that would be amazing, because it's about how I went completely doolally after having our first baby.
Right.
That's been amazing. That's been so amazing to alchemize all that dark stuff into jokes. Has been selfishly really good for me, and also for audiences, just been a really nice way to connect with other
people. Do you get people come up to you and say, oh my gosh, I was like that?
Yeah, so the first time I ever did it at the Stand in Newcastle, I've never felt nerves like that. I just had this voice in my head going, why have you told yourself that this will be funny to talk about this on stage? This woman came up to me afterwards, she was just sobbing, and she was like, she kept repeating, I thought I was alone. Oh. You're not alone, Catherine.
I tell you one thing. If you ever want to come down to London to do it, you could do it at my Scream of Laughter, where mums bring their babies.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I would love to do that.
Right, we'll talk off air, but...
Yes, yeah.
That was one of my favourite stories of yours was... when you were at Edinburgh. So you were at Edinburgh this year.
Just gone.
We just had, yeah. And saying about, because the accommodation, people don't know, Edinburgh is really expensive. And you were like, I'm going to stay true to brand. And I'm going to stay in a caravan with my family at the Edinburgh Fringe.
Yeah.
And I was like, that is brilliant. And I did actually have a little bit of a Google, but they'd all gone.
Oh, they went quick. It was, do you know what was lovely about it? Help me keep perspective on the Fringe, because when you're in, I don't know if you felt this, but when you're in the city of Edinburgh and the posters and everybody's flying and everyone's there sort of trying to sell their wares, and you just get a bit like, it's amazing and that the atmosphere is wonderful, but it's hard to remember that there's a world outside of that. And every night after the show, I would have one drink with my fellow comics. Then we'd get on the train and go 20 minutes on the train to my little caravan park. And there would be, like, my husband, my children, my parents dancing.
Your parents as well?
Yeah, they came. Yeah. They'd be, like, dancing, do you know, the caravan entertainment.
In the clubhouse.
In the clubhouse. Some singer would be on and, like, they'd have won the bingo. And I was like, okay, yeah, this life's still going on as well. Let's remember that. It was helpful. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's important.
Where do you stay when you go?
You see, I'm a bit the other way around now. I know what you mean by keeping your feet on the ground, but I used to stay with friends. If my friends are listening, I'm going to... Okay, I've got to be careful what I say. But I used to stay with, like, other comics, and that would... To be honest, every option has its pros and cons. And I'm so lucky I get to stay with a friend who lives in Edinburgh, which is great. But actually, this last one that I did... Because they end up being really busy and they've got two kids and I was busy. I never really saw them. And I really missed having like another comic to chat to at home that we just go, oh, it's all a load of bollocks, isn't it?
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And my friend's living her life. She's got her two kids. She's going to work. It's a different world. But also I just didn't see her. But the previous years that I've stayed with them, it has been great. We've had to go out for meals and we do stuff and it sort of grounds me. But yeah, this last year I felt a little bit, So they all have its pros and cons, but
yeah.
Yvonne, do have me back.
Yvonne, if you're listening, she loves you.
But I do know what you mean, because the previous year when my now ex-husband came up and we stayed in an Airbnb with the kids, I loved it. You know, the kids really took me away from it. And I can't believe I'm saying that I actually missed the kids.
Yeah.
Like, so this last year, 2024, I didn't see the kids for 2 weeks, and it was quite hard. And I think it was not having, like you say, that balance of them and their silly little worries and that, just to take you out of it.
Yeah. It's weird though, because there's a balance, isn't there? Like, some days if I've got a gig and I've got the children with me, it's such a sort of sensory overwhelm.
Yeah.
Trying to be a mother while thinking, what was that punchline and what was the... I think there
your
is a
partner part. Pretty good though. I think you've got to say to your partner, I say, I am dad, you're mum, okay?
Yeah.
I can't think about what they're wearing. You're mum, I'm dad.
Yeah, that's a really good way of putting it. Yeah. Because it's that thing, isn't it? You need them to take the headspace for a while and the emotional load for a while, just so you can think about what you're doing that night.
Yeah.
Yeah, so 2 weeks. I've been thinking about the two. I don't think I could do longer than 2 weeks without the children. I wonder how I'd cope with them missing them. I think there'd be part of me that would be like, wow, feel quite liberated for the first few days. And then I think it would set in that 2 weeks is quite long without them, isn't it?
Yeah, when they came up and they then left me, that was quite nice, because it was like I'd seen them.
Yeah.
I had a dose, and then I really appreciated, like, oh, I've got a couple of days left. I'm going to go for it, you know. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about our working class sort of backgrounds there.
Okay.
I mean, I know we sort of touched on it, on like how you define it. What do you think makes you, you know, your working
class? What do I think makes me working class? I didn't think or realise that I was until I went to university. So because I'm from like a small village outside a small town in South Wales where... most people's granddads were miners. Most of my friends were, if they went to uni, were the first ones in their family to go. When I was little, my dad had four jobs. And he was just always running from one job to another.
Wow.
Like he was a bingo caller, he used to deliver post. He would just kind of fit it all in together. And my mum sort of held down the fort at home. But I remember money being a real thing that they worried about and talked about. And my mum would sit with like a notepad and a pen and her glasses on once a week working out the budget and all of that. And I just thought, well, that's normal. This is what... And then as I got older and like I say, moved away to university and saw the way that other people reacted when they would come to my house to like visit my family home, and you go, oh, they see me as working class. I'm working class. Who knew that was a thing? Do you know what I mean? So I think if I'd have stayed in South Wales in that little bubble, I would probably be calling myself middle class because I didn't know any different. And I still think even now, within working class, there's levels, isn't there?
Yeah.
I think people may find me a bit confusing on stage when I talk about being working class because, like, I do sometimes use bigger words or, you know, and I will talk about how I parent as if I'm middle class now.
Yeah.
Because I used to be a nanny in London and I kind of learnt from that mum.
Oh my God, we've had such similar backgrounds as I did as well.
And that was did you?
Quite a posh family.
Yeah.
And had a river at the bottom of their garden.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah. These ones, they just did like, I just remember you'd go into their house in Highgate and it would just smell of homemade granola and like, it was amazing. And just how patient she was with her children and how much time she had for them and how she would articulate stuff to them. That was a bit of a turning point where I thought, okay, this is my background and I'm proud of it and I love it. But if I ever have children, I'm going to really try and be like that.
Oh, was your mum a little bit shouty?
Yeah, I think like she was phenomenal, but proper 80s parent.
Yeah.
And food was fuel. It was fish fingers, chips and peas, and then out to play. And I mean, I always knew I was loved, but I was also one of three. And then my brother and my sister had children and there was always other people that my mother had to think about. And so I don't know. It wasn't like that middle class model of, this is like a sacred time. We're going to honour this small child and bring her up gently. It wasn't that. It was not.
And this was all before gentle parenting. And stuff.
Yes.
Because my mum wasn't so much that she was shouty. She was quite a quiet person. My dad was more the sort of had a bit of a temper and stuff. But when you see other parents and stuff and there's just, I wonder why that was a thing. But the money thing, I remember seeing my mum counting out her coins at the till. And she always said when I was older, she went, you never wanted for anything. She said, I think because you saw me struggling a bit, she said, you never was one of these children who want, want, want. I have tried that tactic with my children. It doesn't work.
Yeah. I don't know if there was something about our generation where like subliminally I knew not to ask for stuff. I just never did. I would hope for stuff. And I remember like staring at magazines in the shops.
Oh.
And my mother just being like, well, it's nonsense. Or, you know, and it was just brushed aside.
I think my mum just ignored me, to be honest. But we're all so much about explaining to children. And she'd just go, what are you doing? She's got so much on her mind, so much going on. Yeah, she hasn't got time.
Hello, you're listening to the Funny Mummy Podcast. Can I have a snack now?
Do you like watching a bit of TV, Kate?
I do.
So my sister likes to leave me a voice note of recommendations of stuff that will save us flicking through the programs and all the different streaming services. So this is my sister Tracy with Mum Watch.
Hello, Hattie. Got another review for you. It's on BBC iPlayer and I think on Apple TV. I just quickly looked it up. But this one, it's called Normal People. It's based on a novel by Sally Rooney. My daughter got me into it. She was watching it. I walked in the room and you know when you go, oh, just sat down, started watching it. It's lovely. It's heartbreaking. It's all those things that you want from a drama. There is romance, obviously, so it starts off, they're in school, so I did feel like I had to pretend I was watching it with my daughter, but actually in the end I would have watched it on my own. So they're in school, she's like the outcast girl, comes from a rich family, but for some reason doesn't gel well with people. Marianne is the girl, Connell, he's like, you know, into his sports, very popular with all the boys and the girls. And anyway, they start a bit of a thing because his mother does cleaning for Marianne's family. So he goes to pick her up of an evening.
Two classes.
In the car. Mm-hmm. So Marianne and Connell start this sort of secret affair because he doesn't want her to tell anyone. Oh, we've all been there, haven't we? Anyway, so then it carries on and it's the ups and downs, and it's, I forget how many episodes it is. There's quite a few. It might be six, I think. But it's ever so worth a watch. Oh, no, I'm just looking on my iPad. 12 episodes. Lovely. So, yes, enjoy that one. Bye.
There we go.
I love her.
Have you seen Normal People?
I've read the book. I've seen the first episode. But this, I find this is one of the downsides of being married. He didn't like it, so we had to abandon it after the first episode. I know.
And it's always that thing, it does get raunchy. It's good. And I know why my sister loves it, because she loves that kind of like, ooh, he's a bit of rough.
Yeah.
She's like that.
That's my thing. That's absolutely up my street. And I really enjoyed the book. Once I got over the fact she doesn't use punctuation, like at all, like there's no full, like speech marks. It's really strange.
Okay.
But she's won awards and that, so she must know what she's doing.
Yeah, she knows what she's doing. It's working for her.
Have you seen, I think it's on Netflix, Hacks?
Nice.
It's a series about an aging female comedian who's like in her 60s and she's had a glorious career. Yeah. But it starts with, she's got a show that's been going for years at Vegas. I think it's Caesar's Palace. And then her male boss just kind of says, you're too old, like essentially. Even though she's still brilliant, she gets kind of paired up. Her agent pairs her up with a young female comedy writer.
Lovely.
And it's essentially about like the two different types of comedy and the two different personalities and the two different generations forming this amazing friendship. I love it. Hacks is really good.
Oh, I can't believe I haven't heard of that. Hacks, how do you spell it? H-A-X?
H-A-C-K-S, like a hack comedian.
Ah, of course. The premise of that reminds me of, what's that one? Marvelous Mrs. Mabel?
Yeah, there are similarities. My God, I loved that, of course.
Oh my gosh, did I love that.
Yeah, so good. It makes me cry, like, watching that.
It was so poetic. Well, like, look at us. We've been to university. But it was like a play, wasn't it? Because sometimes they do it, like, follow around a different room, especially when they're in their New York.
Yes.
I just thought it also just was filmed in that so beautifully.
It really was.
She'll make you want to be a comic, maybe, or not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is a slight spoiler for anyone that hasn't seen it, but the way the series ends with kind of, all she's got left really is her amazing house and her friendship. Yeah. And but like she hasn't had a close bond with her children. And that freaks me out a bit.
Yeah, that's a little bit like, come on. You wouldn't show that of a man comic, would you?
No, that's a good point. It's a really,
you know what I mean? It would just wouldn't even be mentioned.
Yeah. Oh, he'd be a great dad. He'd be a great dad because he was setting an example and showing.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I know, I hadn't thought of it like that.
Yeah, so that bit's a bit like, oh, come on. But it's of the time as well, because it's sort of set in the 50s. So, yeah, but no, it's great. So do you think being working class has, like your upbringing influenced your parenting? And
yeah.
But for the good and for the bad, you can give me a good example and a bad example.
I think my mother was a really authentic mother. Like, I saw the full range of emotions on display, whereas I can be guilty of only crying in the bathroom and putting on a bit of a face with the children sometimes, I think. Maybe that's a cliche to say working class parents are authentic, but I think that's what I felt. And I think what I saw that I didn't want to take forward was just how hard they slogged at work. And just that sort of thing of, if you want money, you have to work at something you might not necessarily like. And I thought, I just remember this recurring thing of, God, work is something you have to do a lot. So I really want to like it. Whatever I choose to do, I really want it to be something I like.
Yes.
But parenting-wise, I feel like it was really that nannying thing for me. I just was like, oh, God, so you can do it like this as well if you want to. It was quite inspiring. Yeah, I don't know. Do you think it's influenced your parenting?
I think I'm doing that thing of, I'm getting more like my mum. You know, you start off like not like her and her telling me like, oh, I didn't do it like that and da 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 da. And then, yeah, now they're older. I mean, she quite spoilt me.
Yeah.
I was the youngest and a bit of a mistake, as they would say, because there was quite a big gap between me and my sisters.
Oh, that's what I had as well.
Yeah. The pleasant mistake. Yeah. She did spoil me more than the others. That's the thing about the whole working class thing. Because you have that image of on a council estate and you're just out playing all day. I did do all that, but I wasn't like, you know, running around with rags on or something.
No, yeah, of course, yeah.
I think I had that typical thing. Okay, so here's the thing, like, it's that thing, I don't know if you had this, between at Christmas time, because my husband, ex-husband, was brought up what would be considered middle class, right? So Christmas time for me is loads of presents, whether you can afford it or not, even if it means a lot of them are secondhand. That's what my mum did for us. Whereas for him, it was like, no, that's too much. We've got enough, blah, blah, blah. One book is fine.
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? Because I think the working class thing is, I think this with how much my mother cleaned the house as well. It's like something to prove always. So Christmas was always massive in our house, and my mother would save up all year for the presents, and it was all about the sort of quantity of stuff on Christmas morning. Whereas then I know some middle class families where it's like they have a gift each, and it's very like classy and minimalist, and that blows my mind. That I'm like, but where's all the, why don't you have to wade through all the tat? Like,
yeah. And, you know, some of that I'm quite happy to take on now. As they get older, I'm like, yeah, actually, let's calm it down a little bit. I don't know. That's the thing, that you've got the money thing and saying about, like, you want to parent them in a certain way, like when you were nannying, but you want them to have those sort of working, a lot of working class principles to not be in at entitlement.
Oh, 100%.
How do you get that balance?
Yeah.
How old are yours now?
So Letty's 9 and Jessie's 7. They're very, very aware that there are some months we can afford to do something and some months we just can't. Like January was brutal this year. We'd got Letty a rabbit for Christmas and the hutch and that was expensive and it was kind of... And so January was very much like they sort of wanted to go do things or go to a trampoline park. And I was like, we can't this month. We just can't afford it. And I do talk a lot about at university how I was sometimes made to feel like I wasn't as good or the same as, or sometimes I think, oh my God, am I bringing them up to be inverted snobs? Because like they know what the word Tory means and they know that in our house that's a bad thing and like all this something to be wary of. I don't know how you get it right. I think they're going to be who they're going to be, and we're just maybe not as big a part in that as we think we are.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
You can do everything you try, but they'll just... You want them... I mean, this is absolutely impossible task, but kind of like... They'll say, why can't we have this or do this? Like, why have you not got enough money? They go, I've got money in my piggy bank and all this sort of thing, right? And I go, but sometimes it's just not good to be greedy. And they're like, look at me like, I'm mad. Like,
yeah.
I'm like trying to explain. It's like, oh, God, I give up.
Yeah. How old are your two?
They're 6 and 9.
Okay.
They're both boys. Yours are both girls.
No, one girl and one boy. Yeah.
Sorry, you said Letty and...
Jesse. I named him after Jesse from Breaking Bad, the lovable meth dealer.
That's a little bit of who my hot builder looks like, a little bit.
He's so fit, isn't he? Not my son, the one from...
But kids ask who they're named after. Has he ever asked you?
Yeah, I said you're from a series called Breaking Bad. You won't be able to watch it till you're older. I was honest. I just said me and Dad really, really liked his character and he's got a lovely speaking voice.
I love that. I mean, that's really working class. Come on.
Yeah, it is.
My first child, Huxley.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Nice.
I always quote that my husband said, I don't know about Huxley. I think it's so he had that kind of, he was like liberal middle class.
Yeah.
Right. So he was like, I'm just worried it's going to sound really posh. And I'm like, not when my family say it.
That's why we need this name. Yeah.
Yeah. It'll be fine. Yeah, because they're double barreled as well now, because both of us wanted our name in there, so the poor things.
Oh, Huxley's an amazing name. I really like it.
Thank you. But then the second one is named after a character from the children's movie Sing. Now you're thinking, is he called Gorilla? Is he called? It's called Buster.
As in, oh my God, Lush, Buster Moon. Love it.
I was just watching it one day with Huxley, and I was like, I like the name Buster. And then
Huxley and Buster, I love those names.
Buster's more of a working class name.
Yeah.
I can always tell the type of people that go, oh, Buster, I love that. Yeah, love that.
Yeah.
You can't imagine,
can't
you?
Yeah, oh, definitely. We've had a thing lately with Letty, who's mine, where she hates her name.
Oh, no.
Yeah, to the point where she keeps asking if she can change it.
What does she want to change it to?
Oh, well, this was the thing. I was like, right, well, I'm going to be one of these open-minded mums. I sat on the floor with her and I was like, it's a big deal to change your name. But I said, you know, we can talk about this. You need to feel like it suits you. And what are you thinking of? And she went, Peaches.
That's the thing. You want to be open-minded, but...
I was like, I think we need to workshop this a little bit longer.
Yeah. If you still like it in a couple of years, we'll look at it.
Oh, God. I think it's connected to sort of low self-esteem, isn't it? Not liking your name. Because if you were happy in your skin, why wouldn't you like the name you were given, I guess?
I think it's that, or kids just sort of like, don't have a bit of identity.
Yeah.
You know? They're like, I turned vegetarian when I was like 12. So I was like,
yeah, she's just turned veggie.
Like, this is me now.
I'm
Peaches and I don't eat animals.
Oh God, who am I raising?
Exactly. That's the thing. So basically, we've got to bring up our kids with working class values, but a middle class privilege.
Yeah, no, but not make them too aware of that middle class privilege, because we want them to know how lucky they are. It's awful, isn't it?
Well, how could you, like you say, but you always had that feeling of like, am I too much, or do I deserve to be in this room as much as anybody else? I had the thing with university. They said to me, oh, we're going to have to get rid of that accent. That's what they said to me. Yeah.
So after university, I did like a postgraduate year at a drama school in London, and they used to get me to go in early for extra lessons to sort out my Welsh vowels.
Really?
Oh, my accent was so much stronger than this, and that makes me sad, because I love the Welsh accent, and I think, and I would go in every day and kind of religiously have to go through saying the vowels like the Queen did. And then, ironically, the minute I left, every single casting director just wanted me to be Welsh.
Yeah, I've had the same since then. I was really lucky. I had like an older student who sort of took me under her wing, and she said, like, don't ever lose your accent.
Good.
But yeah, what do you think about the whole thing then, that the Welsh accent is a very trusting accent?
Yeah. I mean, it's difficult for me to be objective about it, because I grew up hearing it, and so to me it's kind of course I would trust it, that's the voice I grew up hearing. But for me, I find much more that people find you comical if you're Welsh, or like, I've got a bit in my set that I talk about, I'll drop in to a conversation that I went to university, because I used to find that people would sometimes, not everyone, but the stereotype is that if you're Welsh, you're kind of lovable and affable, but a bit stupid. And in my experience, Welsh people, where I'm from in South Wales, it's a stereotype, but they're lovely, they're very family orientated, very kind of community driven. They don't like anyone, and this is something I struggled with when I moved away, they don't like the idea that someone's getting too big for their boots in any way. You must stay humble, you must stay salt of the earth, a Welsh person will come back from the best holiday ever and you say, how was it? If you say it was great, you're a bit of a snob. You have to say, oh, well, the flight was a disaster. And then when we got to the airport, it's like, it's a really good thing if you moan a lot in Wales. It shows that you don't. And then when I moved away, I was like, oh, I don't know, actually. Are we doing ourselves a massive disservice by focusing on the negative all the time?
Yeah. That's a bit of a working class thing.
Yeah, I think it's probably a class thing as well. I'm sure there were people in South Wales boasting about brilliant holidays, but I never knew them. They weren't in my sort of circles.
It's definitely a thing, and I felt it in my own family, where it's that classic, I don't know if you have this, where it's like, when I was at university, they were more interested in my part-time job of working with old people and cleaning their bums than what essay I was doing or whatever on drama and what...
That's really interesting. Yeah, that's really interesting. With university, I remember my mother was so proud and was really, like, very keen that I did well. But I felt it with the year that I did at drama school. I remember her saying when I left, I had my case, my trolley, and she went, and when it doesn't work out, you can come home. And the focus was on when this daft dream of yours... fit, we'll be here for you. Because I don't think they ever really thought that that was achievable.
Yes.
For like somebody like
us. Fair enough if you don't. And this is the other thing, isn't it? My ex and my friend, I've gone on to have lots of posh friends, Kelly.
Yeah, of course because you're cool. And they want to be with you.
And, you know, that went to boarding school and all that sort of thing. And that's really fascinating. And to be honest, every single one of them said they had a blooming miserable time and they're very jealous of my upbringing, to be honest.
Yeah.
I'd say on that note, we're going to have to wrap up anyway. So for those on Patreon, you can keep on listening, but for everyone else, it's a very cheap rate on Patreon. It's going to be basically the price of a latte. The idea is to build a bit of a community.
Oh, I like that idea.
And there'll be lots of like free lives and stuff like that. And they'll get to listen to the podcast first and a little bit extra. So is there anything, I mean, I'm sure there's lots, anything you want to big up that you're doing and anybody else?
Oh God, what am I doing? Who am I? What day of the week is it? I should have thought about where I'm doing my show next, but I haven't. No, I just feel like something has clicked with the stand-up the last few months where I'm properly starting to make some money from it and I'm quietly starting to believe in myself a bit more with it. And that clutching the bathroom sink before you go on stage, I'm not clutching it quite so hard. Like that terror, do you know, it's kind of, it's being replaced by a... still adrenaline, but more of a belief in myself. So I'm excited about that. I don't have like a particular gig to big up.
People to follow you.
Oh yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah, if anybody wanted to follow me, I post about my gigs, but also about my family and my life on Instagram.
That's very funny.
Thank you.
And your rabbit.
Kelly.Rickard_123 on Instagram.
If anyone wants to sponsor you to go to Edinburgh,
yes.
I've got sliding to your DMs.
I'm keeping my fingers crossed because next week I entered a competition and I'm down to the last eight on this showcase to get a bursary to do Edinburgh. It's the Chortle Hotshots and so I have to go up to Monkey Barrel in Edinburgh. But I think there's eight of us and we're doing 7 minutes each. No pressure. If I get a bursary from that Edinburgh in August, yes, that'll be amazing.
Oh, that'd be great. Well, thank you very much for coming on. We'll carry on talking about our favourite working class mums in TV and film. And lots of other stuff. And maybe we'll reveal some kind of secret. Thanks very much, Kelly. Do tell your friends to keep listening and subscribing. It really does help more people find us. Those mums that need to listen to us in the middle of the night. Maybe they're doing a feed. Or maybe, remember those days?
Oh, God, yeah.
Maybe your kids have your empty nest syndrome and this will make you feel better. Appreciate it. All right. Thank you, Kelly.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. I've been Hattie Ashan. And thank you to my producer, Natalie King. Don't forget to join the gang over on Patreon. Just search for Funny Mummies Podcast with Hattie Ashdown. For the price of a coffee, you can support this podcast. You'll get to hear it first. You'll get a full version and loads of other perks. come join the Funny Mummies community.
Happy Mother's Day.